Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, CEO and Chief Scientist of Ocean First Institute, Dr. Mickey McComb-Hobza.
Night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Mishka Fritz. I am Mark Leisure, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I have been learning so much, just learning about our guest and following the Ocean First Institute in the many things that they do, the information, the education, the many videos. And I was excited learning and I thought, oh, this is great. And this is great. We're going to talk about this on the show. And then I started getting into some of the things that, that I thought, okay, I want to learn more about this. Like there's a free ocean life course and there's a free ocean explorer course. The deeper I went in, I noticed there's a plastic pollution monitoring portal. There's a interview about the importance of sharks. Like, we have to be told how important sharks are. Like, hey, people, don't just kill all the sharks. Then there's a study on where have all the great white sharks gone? And I thought, huh. And then there's this whole conversation about plastics and how the plastics are affecting the oceans, and then there was this controversial conversation about a fishery and et cetera. And I thought, wow, this is all so important. And is that us causing some of this stuff? I mean, of course it's us. The plastics, the animals didn't do that. The ocean didn't do that. The plants didn't do that. The sky didn't do that. The plastics, definitely us. Definitely us. The great whites, is that something happening to the great whites? Or is it us? Is it us? We could learn, but I think it might be us. And the fishery, that's us. And I'm thinking, you know, where are the classes on... what are we doing? Where are the classes on what are you thinking? Where are the classes on, hello, we share this planet? Where's the seminar on that? Where's the TEDx talk on how to be a human who lives with, in communion with, the ocean and the earth and the animals? Now, this is not per se their job at the Ocean First Institute, although I kind of felt like, as I'm learning this, I feel the onus. I feel like I have to do more, and I hope all of us are feeling it. And so there, that when I got to talk to our guest and I shared this with her, she kind of like, yeah, crazy, right? But, and then she had some good news for me. And then I went on to the internet to see, like, does anybody really care? Is anybody really listening? And according to the internet, evidently, yes, a lot of us care. We're not alone in those that care. And a lot of us are looking for support, education, to know more, to be informed, and to know what we could do. So I thought, great, that's why we're here today. And so excited to have our guest in this conversation today.
That would be a really long TED talk, the how to be a human.
Oh, right.
And
where do we start?
Exactly. And as you were talking, I was thinking about, I reflect on this often, that we got these meat suits, we come down to this planet, this earth plane, and there's no operating manual.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really get any rule book.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're saying. So many things are unfortunately learned when you're brought to the precipice.
And when do we learn it's okay, we can kill sharks, it's okay, we can pollute the ocean, it's like,
I don't know that we learned it from that perspective, but unfortunately we don't learn that it's not good until we need to have this conversation.
Until we need to have this conversation right now. Yeah. And I'm glad we're here. So this episode is titled Inspiring Ocean Conservation with Hands-On Research, Education, and Media, and so much more. This is episode 871, and our special interview guest is a marine biologist. She's an explorer. She's a conservation leader, and she's CEO and chief scientist of Ocean First Institute. She's the reason for the season. Welcome, Dr. Mickey McComb Kobza, to the Life Changes Show.
Well, good evening. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
It is a pleasure. We're going to learn how to be human.
That's fantastic. I'm all for it.
So we're going to talk about how you came to all of this. But before you coming to all of this, was there ever a time when you didn't know that oceans were important?
Well, absolutely. I think when I was a young kid, I grew up in Colorado and a landlocked state, and spent a lot of my childhood, as I hope many of us do, out in the wilderness and in nature, and really enjoying that. And didn't really know a whole lot about the ocean until kind of a fateful event happened to me. And that's the beginning of my story.
And we're going to get to hear about the fateful event. I mean, you obviously survived. So spoiler alert.
Yes, absolutely. So, the funny story for me, how I got interested in the ocean in the first place, is I was 7 years old and I went to go see the movie Jaws. We all know about Jaws. It's at its 50-year anniversary right now. And I walked into that movie theater with my brother, and I saw the movie, and I walked out of there terrified of sharks. And I thought sharks were under my bed. I thought they were under the kitchen table. I used to sit at the table with my legs up, and I tried out for the swim team, and I made it because I was swimming from invisible sharks that were coming out of the drain. So I had a big shark problem. And the only way that I knew to overcome that fear was to read about sharks. And luckily enough for me, my parents had an animal encyclopedia set, and there was a whole section on sharks. And when I read about sharks, I realized they weren't the monsters that they were in the movies. And in fact, what I realized is they were incredibly well-adapted animals with a long evolutionary history on our planet. You know, sharks are older than trees. They're older than the rings of Saturn.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know. Wow.
Yeah, they've lived through all of the world's five mass extinction events. So the story of the shark is a true story of survival. And when I learned all of these things about them, my love for them came out. And that childhood fascination, that fear was changed. And really, my life now has been about sharing that incredible story of the sharks, the truth about sharks, and why they're important for our ocean, for a healthy ocean, and why, you know, the fear that we have of them is really unwarranted. And their story is far more interesting than the scary great white shark story that we hear about them.
Well, from that side of the scary to the side of the scary where they have survived mass extinction events, and now can they survive humans?
That's really the billion dollar question. You know, we have 8 billion people on our planet now, and, you know, wildlife, we are in a mass extinction event right now. It's the sixth mass extinction. It's called the Anthropocene. It's, an event caused by us humans. And really the question we have to ask ourselves is, you know, do we want to live on a planet without all of the other animals on it. And biodiversity is critical for our own survival. And really, right now, many of the things that we're doing has reduced biodiversity, and that includes the sharks. There's over 530 shark species in the ocean, and over 30% of them are facing extinction. Another
Whoa.
30, are data deficient. That means we don't have enough information about them to even classify them on the conservation spectrum.
So not only do we want to live on a planet, can we survive on a planet without these biodiverse animals and plants, etc.?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think it's a really interesting one. As a biologist, I think about it often. And species have a role. I often think of an ecosystem like a bicycle. You can remove the bell, you can remove the streamers, you can remove certain parts of it without really huge impacts. But there's going to be a moment where the chain is going to come off, and once that happens, you can't put it back. And I think that's what's happening right now is we're losing species. Some of them we don't notice, they go quietly in the night. But there are others that are keystone species, meaning they have a disproportionate impact on our ecosystems. When some of those go, it's like a boom, a reverberation into an ecosystem. And that's what sharks represent. They are the watch guards of the ocean. We need them in order to have a healthy ocean. And right now, we're pushing them to the brink. We're pulling them out of the water faster than many of them can replace themselves. And I would argue at our own peril.
Wow. Now that's the scary story of sharks.
It is.
That's scary. And so to me, it's interesting that though you lived in Colorado, and that's a good excuse, I grew up by the ocean, but that's not to say I knew too much about sharks, except maybe the horror stories, and then Jaws came around as well. But where is education happening about what you're saying for children?
That's just such an excellent question. And it's the one that I think has driven me in the last 10 years to really fight for online education, to go into schools, to teach students, to connect them to the natural world, to get them to care. If we don't understand, if we don't see, we won't care and we won't act to protect things. And I think kids, and adults too, we have this natural connection to animals. It's in us, and it's really strong, I think, when we're young, and we begin to lose that. And what's important is for us to understand it and to connect to it. And in the school system, we don't talk a lot about that, and it's lost. We don't talk about the ocean. We don't teach marine biology. And so there's entire generations that don't understand climate, that don't understand things like climate change. They don't know the history of the earth just because it isn't taught. And so my institute, what we've done is created free online courses, things like ocean literacy, several very basic things that every human being should know about the planet so that we understand. And also marine biology, all of the different facets. It's incredible for us to be able to share those things with young people to get them to understand and connect. Because once we have that connection, I think that's when we see people change, and that's when we start to really see impact in conservation.
I was listening to you and I had this thought of Airbnb, for example, where we walk into a brand new Airbnb or one we've not been in, and there's a list of this is where this is, and this is how you get this to work, and this is how you turn this on. And to Mark's point, we don't have any education on how to be human, but how to also be in the planet, like what's where and what's supporting. And when we talk ocean, isn't that the majority of the planet?
It really is. And it's funny, we know more about the surface of Mars than we do our own deep ocean. There is this inherent bias that we have as people. And it's really fascinating. The bias that we have comes from fear. I think we fear sharks, we fear the ocean. We sometimes break that connection, that innate natural connection that we have to the water. We evolved in the water. Animals first came from the ocean. And so it's in us, deep in our DNA. But we've learned to fear and disconnect from it. And I think that you're right. We don't have the manual or the blueprints, and we don't share that knowledge really. And I think it's our opportunity to do that, and to do that in a way I think that unlocks the wonder. The world, the our planet is an incredibly beautiful place. You look at the sun, you go outside, you see animals, dolphins, sharks, turtles. It's marvelous. And I think the opportunity is to really connect people to leaning into that wonder. And for me, it's always the positivity. It's always the hope. It's always that it's not too late. Nature is resilient if we just give it a chance, and if we just connect people to it. That's the only recipe I know.
You must talk to people in big industries, and what is the pushback you're getting? Is it we make money off of this, or if we don't do it, somebody else is going to do it, like kill the sharks or for food or what have you?
It is, there's a lot of different things that we can, talk about. In sharks in particular, it absolutely is money. It's greed. And really what we're looking at is twofold. We're looking at one fishery, which is for fins, which is used in shark fin soup, which is a delicacy. It doesn't really have any flavor in soup, and it is very expensive. It's a luxury meat. It's a luxury item, and that is been really pushing the decline, the global decline of sharks for 50 years. I mean, it's been happening for hundreds of years, but there's an emerging middle class that has been able to afford this and pushed global catches of sharks to the brink. But it's not only fins, it's the meat. And so we're catching more and more to feed our 8 billion people on the planet. And I think that's really the question we have to ask ourselves. How can we continue to use our ocean, our species sustainably? And sustainability is really the biggest question because we have enough resources. It's just how we choose to use them and how we move forward in that space.
Which is a whole big question. In some cases, and I actually think what the sharks, dolphins, whales, are they not supposed to actually be smarter than us on a certain level?
That's another really interesting question. When it comes to, I think there's a stereotype that sharks are really dumb, and that they don't really have much going on upstairs. And it really couldn't be further from the truth. Hammerheads in particular, manta rays in particular, are incredibly smart. They school together in groups. They have social hierarchies. They have communication. They may use the Earth's magnetic lines to navigate. They are incredibly complex animals. I think the limitation has been in our ability to understand other animals' capacities.
I didn't, you shared some things with me that I was not aware of, and that is how much being near the ocean is important for humans.
It really is. There's as I mentioned before, life evolved. Life got, excuse me, really big and interesting around 400 million years ago, and that really led all the way to people. So we have this long history with the water. And what's fascinating is that there is a connection to the water. It's in us, and it's called the blue mind. And so whenever we're by water, near, on, or around it, our brains relax, we get less stressed, we become more happy. And it's really a natural connection. And when we break that connection to the water, it breaks something in us. And so there is that natural connection to the water. And I think a lot of people feel it innately. I mean, even down to being by a waterfall, even to having a little waterfall at your desk. I mean, just water alone brings out this peaceful calm inside of us. And I think it's critical for us to recognize that.
Now, I know that a lot of people go on vacation to the water, but is have you all set up a like come vacation to Florida, like where you are right now, and you also get to learn something? Is there something like that?
Yeah, there is. So we have an operation in Florida. We do our scientific research. Mainly, we focus on sharks. We also work on Goliath grouper, but we love to bring people to our lab, to where we are in the Florida Keys, and they can come out with us and they can see what we do. And it's essentially being a shark biologist for a day, coming out, or being a marine
Nice.
biologist for a day, just to really see a day in the life of what a scientist or researcher does, and to just explore, to be a curious kid, if you will. And these are really incredible moments that we have seen change lives. We do a couple of day trips where we teach students how to do workups on sharks, do research, and these are transformative moments for these students and for the public alike.
That must be really rewarding when those light bulbs go off and you see it and feel it to you.
It's the best. I've taken students diving with sharks eye to eye. And had them come back up after the dive, and they're yelling and they're so excited, and they tell me, I wasn't scared. It was not exactly what I expected. And I'll see them later talking to a stewardess on an airplane, and they say, I just went diving with sharks, and the stewardess is like, no way, what are you talking about? And I just see that shift, and there's a change, and that's the magic place. That's the place where, someone can go from, who they were to then being an ambassador and being the person that really moves forward and tries to bring more people to that center and to that place of love and empathy and understanding. And it's beautiful to see, and it's beautiful to be part of.
How beautiful to have you say bring people to that place of love, empathy, and understanding. And so, in a sense, when I think when people hear education, like I'm going to go learn about this, or I have to go to school for this, or what have you, yes, they're learning, but when you're connecting them hands-on with the experience, it's a whole different level. Actually, it's being human. Oh, you are doing a be human school, actually.
Yes, you are, because when you think of books or you think of things like that, you're right. There's an inclination to shut down, and it's like, no. But when you see a whale breach, or when you see a hammerhead swim by, there is a giddy magic. It's intoxicating. It's like a rapture. I don't know how to describe it, but it's the natural world in its most raw. When I look into the eye of a shark when I'm diving, I'm looking back in time as to all of the things that have happened to that animal that have allowed it to be there looking back at me. It's an honor, and I feel it, when you're in it and you experience these very fleeting moments with wildlife. They're incredibly impactful.
So, not to take away from the experience you had growing up in Colorado, where in the mountains you could experience a bear or a mountain lion or something where there's also history there, there's an importance to those animals too, right?
Well, there's such an incredible parallel to an animal that I also care deeply about, and that is wolves. Sharks are the wolves of the sea. Wolves in Colorado have been reintroduced with limited success. I mean, some success, but it's a stereotype. We're fighting against predators. People do not like predators, and there is that bias. And so, trying to overcome those stereotypes of what a predator is and their value in an ecosystem is a tough sell, but it's an important one because we need predators in order to have functioning ecosystems. And so really that's been my life's work is almost rolling a rock uphill trying to explain, the value of predators, which inherently can scare people.
So potentially the balance we were talking earlier, you and I, how there's an imbalance of how people connect or are disconnected with their surrounding, their world, the ocean. Potentially the predator is only a quote unquote predator, that wolf, when there isn't the natural balance of what they would normally eat. And like they might not prefer to go after a person's pet dog if there were the balance, right? So is that part of it?
Absolutely. I mean, you nailed it. That's exactly what it is. If we had intact functioning systems, these wouldn't be we wouldn't see the things that we're seeing today. But now, in many cases, we're managing systems because so many things are unbalanced. And there are so many people that work in wildlife management and literally managing systems. And when it comes to the ocean, the really interesting part of it is that it's underwater. It's hard to understand what's happening. And only recently, through cheap technology like GoPros and some of the drones, the underwater equipment, we've really started to get our arms around what's happening. And in essence, we're clear cutting some of our ocean, in some of the very destructive fishing practices. So we have a lot to learn. We have a lot to monitor. And I think we have even more of an opportunity to educate the public about what's happening in order to perhaps bring food to the table. Perhaps we could do this in a better, more sustainable way. And that's important. And I think only things only change when there is a upwelling of public voice. It wasn't long ago that we were killing whales, and it was one person who went out and, took recordings of whale songs, and that came out on records, and people started to think, wait a minute, these are not monsters. These are beautiful creatures with vocalizations and, babies. They have young. And that changed everything. And that wasn't even that long ago. So it's all possible, but I think it's the way we see it.
Are you sharing happy news that we're not killing whales anymore, or it's just been reduced, maybe?
We are. We're doing well. Whales have rebounded, and there is good,
Wow.
there's absolutely, and there's great news for sharks. I was mentioning that there are many shark species that are holding on, but there are protections. There was just a really big victory for many shark species at CITES. That's the convention on the International Trade of Endangered Species. So manta rays, whale sharks, many species are protected. And that just happened. So there is absolutely everything to hope for. And I am a very hopeful person. There are so many people who are really working hard to make a difference and to share the stories of these incredible creatures so that they can not only survive, but thrive on our planet alongside with us.
I said earlier to you, I'm glad there's you, and thank you for doing what you're doing. And you're doing what you're doing. And what do we do? We could support, obviously, the Institute, but people would say, well, I didn't put the plastic out in the ocean, and I didn't kill a shark, but I did have, soup or whatever. I don't know. But where do we start to bring the consciousness into our daily life?
That's a great question, and it is really pretty simple. So, we didn't really touch on plastics, but we may have more plastic in the ocean than fish, in the next decade.
Wow.
It's a scary statistic, and in Colorado, I run education programs in six counties where kids go out with me in the rivers and streams, and we look for microplastics. Those are tiny, tiny little pieces of plastic. When plastic goes into the environment, it never goes away. It just breaks down into smaller and smaller pieces called microplastic. And that's the issue. That's the problem with this. It never goes away. And so we really need to think about, single-use plastic, the thing that we buy from a convenience store and throw in the trash within 5 minutes. It's those things that we really need to think about. It's not that plastic is inherently terrible because it is a wonderful source for us in many ways, but it's the single-use plastics that we have pervasive all over, and we simply don't manage the waste properly. We just don't need to have it. And so it boils down to thinking about what we eat, what we buy, how we do our laundry. Even our laundry releases plastics because we have plastic fibers in our clothing now. It's all really just understanding the simplest things that we can do. Water bottles. Don't buy reusable or use reusable water bottles. Don't buy single-use water bottles. Things like that that just you don't think about very much. Those are critical things that can make a huge difference.
One of the things that I think has helped bring awareness to chemicals that are in our food is certain people calling them over the past couple of years. I've heard it more and more, forever chemicals. And it just draws attention to, oh, there's so when you were saying that, I was thinking forever plastics. To think that we're buying something for that a sandwich is in and it's a big box plastic thing, and it's a forever plastic, but we just threw it away and we hardly held it for 5 minutes, like you were saying. That's a forever thing.
Absolutely. I mean, you couldn't have said it better if you tried. And if you think about it critically, it's ludicrous. I mean, it really is ludicrous that we would, spend, we would create these products that have such a short lifespan, yet they don't have a short lifespan. As you said, they continue to persist in the environment. And here's another mind-blowing thing that my team has just discovered. So when we go out and do our shark research, we catch our sharks. We bring them to the boat, we tag them to understand where they're moving, and then we also do some workup on them, including drawing blood. We've had the blood analyzed, and shark blood that we've had analyzed now contains things like antidepressants, aspirin,
Oh.
heart regulation medications. These are
Wow.
all things that come out of our bodies when we urinate into toilets. That water goes out into the environment, and those chemicals, those pharmaceuticals, are not taken out of the water treatment plants. Now they're being found in animals in the wild. This, we don't know what it does to the animals. We just have found these pharmaceuticals. So this is a whole new line of inquiry for us to determine what this does to them. It's unbelievable. Some of the things that we're finding, and but the thing is, there's solutions. So I don't want to be I don't want to be a doom and gloomer. There really are a lot of things that we can do to turn it around, but I think we have to at least acknowledge and realize the issues, but realize that there are real solutions. And I can tell you, working with a lot of students, a lot of high school age students, they get really angry with what's happening out there, and they are coming up with their own solutions. And I find that intoxicating. Young people are my jet fuel because they don't know the word no, and they just go. And I find that to be so fantastic. And that's exactly what we need right now is innovation and a can-do attitude to attack these big problems, because that's exactly what we need to do is to try to find solutions.
Well, I'm excited about the young kids and what you're sharing, and I actually think they're a TV show for kids. I this is not all on you. I'm just saying, but you're so good, and it's so exciting to listen to you and the way you're doing it. It's exciting. So are some of those things happening? Because I know you've been on TV a lot. I'm just saying, you've been on BBC and CBC and NPR.
For sure. I mean, you know, the Sharks are, you know, I have so much hope. I have so much hope. And, you know, there is a lot of love for these animals out there. And when I talk to kids, it's like dinosaurs. Sharks and dinosaurs are really a main driveway into the sciences and into the natural world. And I just can't tell you how many times I've been able to talk to students and their eyes light up and they, you know, they're changed. Gosh, you know, it's the easiest job in the world to go out there and talk to people about this. And, you know, it's an honor. I feel many times when I think about what I get to do every day, I go out on vessels and I'm working on great white sharks. And, you know, I sometimes I stop and I get to put my hands down on them and I'm looking at a, you know, a 14-foot animal and the power and the, and again, that history, that long history, it's incredible. And, you know, I feel like there is, people want to connect to the natural world, and it's really, it just feels like my life's work that I get to do this. And it's exciting to get to do talks and shows and to do the research and to let students know, and women, you know, young girls know they can do this. You don't have to be a math wizard to be a scientist. You just have to be curious. That's it. That's it. You know, it really, we have all these barriers and we tell kids no, and we shut them down and we shouldn't. And adults too, you know, we all can do something. And I think that's the biggest part of what I try to share is there's a lot of hope out there and everyone can do something, and we should.
Well, thank you for doing what you're doing. Thank you for saying it and sharing it. Thank you for being curious and being excited. Ocean First Institute, that's
dot org.
And then I'm on Linktree. If you go to linktr.ee, Ocean First Institute, so many links there. Or you can go to YouTube and you could see Dr. Mickey and learn from her and some of the other people as part of the Ocean First Institute. And that's at Ocean First Institute. There's information at the Life Changes show page for Dr. Mickey, but of course at their website at oceanfirstinstitute.org. Anywhere else we should suggest?
Instagram is another great one, and YouTube.
Yes.
They're fantastic. You can check out all of our amazing videos and all of our educational resources. It's all free, free, free. We just want people to get involved. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mickey McComb-Kobza. What an absolute pleasure. And I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation somehow, somewhere, and sharing it with more people.
Yay. Thank you so much. It was such a blast. I appreciate the opportunity. Have a great rest of your night.
Our pleasure. Thank you. Mark, this is so exciting. You've been talking about this for a while. She's been busy traveling all over the world, making things happen. And finally, we've gotten to have this conversation. And I do want so much more.
Yeah, we need to have so much more. I want to give a shout out to Graham Kasdan, who also is with Ocean First and is how we came to know of their efforts, and Dr. Mickey. So thank you, Graham.
Yes, thank you. And there are so many aspects to what they do, what she knows, what they know, what they teach, that almost each one of them could have been a show.
It ultimately deserves to be a series. And you know what? It reminded me heartfully of our past guest and dear friend, the late Robbie Stewart, who had produced the Sharkwater film and certainly brought some of this conversation into view for so many as well.
Yeah, I was thinking of that, on how we've touched on these conversations and how it's getting more and more exciting, because they're like like she said about the whales, like something.
There's
is
a
not-
lot of momentum in what she shared, and a lot of positive motion for that what she shared versus years ago when he was on the show.
Yeah, well, speaking about what she shared a performance guest with us, whom we're going to get to have in a moment. But before we do, it's time for our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is James, and I am grateful for your guidance for over 20 years. And now I have a question about AI. I have used it often and found it very helpful as a research tool. However, many of my family and friends tell me that AI is evil and will destroy humans. They send me many news articles that say this is true. Please let me know your feelings about the future of AI.
Thank you, James, for this timely question. I also have seen many negative articles that warn about the dangers of using AI, and I have received many inquiries about this issue. I also personally use AI as a research tool and have been pleased with the results I receive. However, I also research the results to make sure they are correct. As I have shared many times, we must be extremely cognizant of what we believe. This is especially true if we are relying on the news media to share truth. After receiving your question, I felt it would be interesting to ask AI a question to determine if AI is in alignment with my beliefs. My question was, is it true that AI is going to take over our future and that humans are in danger of this happening? AI answered, no, humans are not in imminent danger of AI taking over the future. But yes, AI will strongly reshape society, and how safe that future is depends on human choices, not on AI having its own will or agenda. I agree with this answer completely. AI's answer went into greater detail, and it confirmed my thoughts on the subject. I also liked this quote from it. Humans are not in danger of being replaced. Humans' roles are evolving. James, I've shared many times that our choices are what create our future. As divine children of God, we are the power in our world, and we must carefully choose to visualize and co-create the life we deserve to live. And now I lovingly suggest you ask the question I asked on the AI sources you use for your research, and would love to hear the results you get and how you feel about the answers you receive. I feel it may also serve you to listen to our recent Life Changes show, number 868, with Brett Leonard for some very interesting perspectives on AI. And thanks again for this timely question.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, write her, instead of AI, at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And with that, we do have our performance segment, and our performance guest is a Bermudan singer, songwriter, and so much more, Mischa Frith. Mischa, welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Filippo, thank you so much. Nice to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. And again, a thank you to Dr. Mickey for introducing us. And we're going to play one of her favorite songs of yours a little bit later. So it's a beautiful love fest here.
Yeah, man.
So speaking of love fest, one of the first things I shared with you was after listening to so many of your songs, I thought, wow, like my first take on so many of the songs were that they were a romantic song. And then I started to think, wait a minute, is it a romantic song? Yes, it's a romantic song, but it's not between humans per se. And then you shared some amazing things that I haven't heard people talk about music and their lyrics in that way before. Please share.
Well, I think it's interesting, you know, because listening to Dr. Mickey talk about the parallels between species and biodiversity and everything, I think it's kind of what I'm saying in the music is that there is a romance between everything in life. You know, biodiversity itself is a big romance of creation. So Yeah, it's that, it's like it's the music is inspired mostly from nature and from, cultures that are profoundly connected to nature and, which is, this, as you were talking about, it's about how do we be human, And I think it's finding that love affair with ourselves in the bigger picture of what we are, which is connected to everything. So
Well, speaking of connecting to everything, Dr. Mickey was saying how she grew up in Colorado, far from the ocean. Turns out you grew up really close, about as close as you could get. Share.
about as close as I grew up on a 42-foot sailboat. Just, my head was, well, I was inches from the water every night when I slept. It's just like the hull
Wow.
of the boat and the ocean, and that's it, So, yeah.
Wow. So we said by in the beginning that you're a Bermudan singer-songwriter. So you're actually born in Bermuda, not on the ocean per se, right?
No, I was actually born on the island itself, but yeah, I'm Bermudian family. Long history of sailing in my family, and my dad carried on that tradition, built a boat, and brought me and my sisters up on the boat. Yeah. So.
Built a boat.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, and so talk about going to the ocean. Like you're literally not only in the ocean, but you were actually in the ocean, what, several times a day?
Yeah, when it was warm enough, which was most of the time. I mean, we sailed to some colder places, but mostly we were in Bermuda or the Caribbean, which was, it's you can swim anytime. So, yeah.
Did you feel it's hard to imagine. So for those of us who can't imagine, did you feel, was it scary? Did you feel like you were connected to the ocean? Were you in harmony with it? Did you feel like if we commune, we'll be okay? How does a child especially feel about the ocean?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it was always the more you played in it, the more you felt comfortable with it, so when the ocean is your playground, whether it's swimming or sailing in a dinghy or diving, then it doesn't become this foreign other thing. It's like it's just an extension of yourself. I did actually, it's funny listening to Dr. Mickey talk about Jaws, the movie, and being terrified of sharks. I didn't see that movie growing up because we didn't have a TV and I wasn't around it. But I did, I don't know if it was a total terror of sharks, but I had a massive respect for their presence. We actually didn't see them that often, but just knowing that, they're much bigger than us and they're an apex predator, and it's like you still kind of think about them sometimes.
So TV is the problem.
It could be one of the problems.
Okay, so when did you develop the music? When did the music develop?
I mean, I took I was musically inclined and interested from as long as I can remember, but I think I started playing guitar when I was about 9, 10 years old. But just sort of playing around. I think I really took it seriously when I was about 17, 18, and I started writing my own lyrics. I was one of those musicians. I never was really interested in learning other people's stuff so much. I'm more interested in it now. It was more about I had something to say, and I liked writing poetry and words and stuff. So I was like, oh, I can write my own songs. That's how I started, basically. I learned some basic chords and then just started to express the kind of message or vibe that I was feeling, So,
Well,
yeah.
speaking of romance and nature and your music, we're going to get to hear a pre-recorded song, and that is one of Dr. Mickey's favorite songs of yours, Stars Will Be Shining. What can you share with us about that before we play it?
So I mean, I think actually the original inspiration for that song was It was about family, and being far from loved ones and being in different situations that made it difficult to be in communication. So it was about saying, we're not really that far from each other. It's like you can look up and you see the stars. It's like the same stars shining on me here are shining on you there. And so it was just a kind of communication thing, but it kind of expanded into thinking about all kinds of situations that people are going through all over the world, struggles and different things, but and yet still these same stars are shining on everybody, from the most fortunate to the most unfortunate, and so yeah, that's kind of what the song is, so.
Beautiful. Well, we're going to get to hear it here. Again, it's pre-recorded. It's Mischa Frith's song, Stars Will Be Shining, from which album?
This one is from the album called Talk About. It's pretty old now. It's 2010, I think. So,
Talk
yeah.
About. And here we are on the Life Changer Show.
Thanks.
Place not so far from the ocean side. Take the time to find our natural pace and look up into the sky. Stars will be shining there for you. Stars will be shining there for you. You may chat through some desolate places where the only thing that grows is strife, and even join the sea of desperate faces, but look into the book of life. Stars will be shining there for you. Stars will be shining there for you. I tried to find the words that would comfort your soul and take you to a higher plane. Some tried and true words that never grow old, but right now to you all I'm saying, stars will be shining there for you. Stars will be shining there for you. It's a beautiful night. Turn off your TV, turn off your light, yeah. Baby, come outside. Cause though for so long clouds have shrouded your sight now. There's a song in your heart, but it's drowned by the voices that Babylon in your head. And stars will be shining there for you. Stars will be shining there for you.
Shining there, we'll be shining there.
find that natural place not so far from the ocean side. Take the time to find that natural place and look up into the sky.
Mishka Frith, thank you, Mishka, for sharing that with us. And Mishka can be found at mishka.com, M-I-S-H-K-A.com. He's also at Mishka Music on Instagram and Facebook, mishkamusic.official. We have the links at the Life Changes show page. You can find more about him there, and actually a video of him as well. Mishka, let's talk reggae.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. As soon as you said, I'm not going to say that's probably not the only music you listen to. So what brought you back? Like, some people go away from their roots. Like, what is your relationship with it?
Man, reggae is just permeated my whole life from when I was, as long as I can remember. We just lost the great Jimmy Cliff. He just passed away, but he was one of the first artists I ever heard. It's like, literally, if I go back to the very, very first memories, it's him, you know? So reggae has been there from the beginning. It's just like, and, you know, it's not a route I would want to run away from, you know? It's like, it's such a glorious music and such, you know, it's like, it carries so much message for humanity and you know, and for the things we're talking about here, you know, just life itself, biodiversity and connection, you know, it's one love. So,
wait. Amen. So I noticed you had the Queen of Reggae on one of your tracks. I mean, you're bringing it in, but it's not like a tribute, it's continuing, because you're adding to the genre with the sounds and the electronics, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think every artist brings their own thing to whatever genre they're in. You know, I grew up with a lot of very acoustic singer-songwritery music too. So I think, you know, I bring that element into what I'm doing as well. It's not always like the last song I heard is, you know, it's more of an acoustic ballad. So I write a lot on the acoustic guitar and it can kind of go in any direction. But yeah, you know, the production, it sort of just depends on what the song is calling for. But I've been really, really blessed to work with some amazing musicians along the way. Like you say, Marsha Griffiths is about to be on a song that I'm releasing early next year. And the guitarist you heard on that last track, that was Daryl Thompson, who was formerly of Black Uhuru. So, yeah, I've had an amazing journey so far, you know?
Real beautiful. This album that you're talking about, this is really special. We're going to get to hear not only a track that hasn't been released yet, but you did an unplugged version for the Life Changes show tonight. So looking forward to that. Thank you. Exciting. Before we get there, though, tell us about the rise and falling of the tides, which is the title of your 8th full-length album.
Yeah, so this is an album, like, it's about 3 years in the making. It started with a really good friend of mine on the island of Nevis, which is where I spent a lot of time when I was younger growing up. He's an incredible maestro producer, this guy named Jazik. And he started doing some remixes and remakes of some of my older stuff, including the one we just listened to, but it ended up not making the album. But he's incredibly prolific and just started experimenting with different sounds and stuff. And then it led into just like, okay, let's just keep going, writing new stuff. And then we went to Jamaica. We got to work with Cleavy Brown, formerly of Stevie and Cleavy, who were one of Jamaica's foremost production teams there, drummer and keyboard player. And then finally took it to the UK, where I had it mixed by Mike Pellacconi, otherwise known as Prince Fatty. So there's an amazing sort of collection of styles and feels, but all artists and players who are really, really true to the genre, you know? So.
One of the things that's exciting for your career and for the world is that you have been on mainstream. Your music has gone mainstream. You've been on some really big mainstream TV shows and talk shows and all of that, and your music's been used and shared. It's interesting though, because I don't know that everybody catches some of the subtleties that are really rooted in truth and groundedness, and so much of what you share is not necessarily mainstream, but hopefully you're a bridge.
Yeah, I mean that would be an honor to be a bridge.
Hopefully you're a bridge. Yeah.
It's I don't know, man. I'm an artist, you know. I love to paint and make images and, like I said, poetry and stuff, and I can't really stop being that. So the mainstream is an interesting thing, you know. It does its thing for its purpose, which is,
Yeah.
you know, it's
Yeah.
I'm not totally wild about mainstream.
Talk about rise and falling of those tides. You're talking about completely different ones. I'll share just one thing before we get into the song that really connected me even more to you when you shared your music and you wrote literally these words to me. And this, I quote, "The offering is yada yada yada." The offering. So obviously you recognize like there's a prayer here, there's a connection here, there's something happening in this moment that we're experiencing right here on the show.
There really is, and it's really been, I mean, I've known Dr. Mickey for a number of years now, thanks to my connection with O Ocean Forest and Graham Kasdan. And every time I hear her speak, it's amazing, just the depth of knowledge that she has and everything. And so it's really cool to be here with you and Mark, is it?
Yes. And Dorothy.
And so, you know, I'm honored to be on this platform, man. It's cool. Thank you so much.
That you're welcome. It's our honor as well. And with that, we receive the offering. We thank you for it, and we look forward to sharing it right now with our audience. Anything we want to know about Remember Me, which will be coming out fully produced next year, but for here, we're getting the unplugged world premiere version. Anything more we want to know?
Oh, this is a song to my beloved. Again, it came out of like a period where we were physically apart from each other for a while, and just just trying to communicate through spirit. I think there's somewhat of a notion of maybe reincarnation, or the forever living spirit in what I was trying to convey in the lyrics in this one. Whether you call it God or Great Spirit or the beloved, you know. But this one is also, to my queen, my wife, in this physical realm. But, we all sort of inhabit some aspect of the divine. So that's like what this is about, I guess.
Well, I was going to say, here's a world premiere, but in honor of today's show, I'm going to say, here's an ocean premiere
Ocean from love
of Mishka
it.
Firth's song, Remember Me, here on the Life Changes Show, unplugged, recorded for this episode.
Thanks, man.
Terrors of the night and the darkness in my mind.
And in the judgment of the noonday sun, shade my eyes from going blind. Will you stand beside me when I cry to the heavens for all that is good to return? And if I light a fire of the broken things of the past, will you let them burn? Will you remember me, my love? Remember me, my love. Remember me, my love. Will you remember me, my love? And if the sorrows overcome my heart, will you let them flow like a tumultuous deluge? Will you keep a warm and dry place for my soul? Will you be for me a refuge? And though the temptations and regrets abound all around, below and above, if I should falter unto them, will you remember me, my love? Will you remember me, my love? Remember me, my love. Remember me, my love. Will you remember me, my love? No separation, so no desperation, no illusion and no crutch, and no expectation of any sensation. It's a blessing just to feel your touch. So may we realize together as we make our way that life's journey is surely enough. And from time to time, if you need me to remind you, then remember me, my love. Will you remember me, my love? Remember me, my love. Remember me, my love. Will you remember me, my love? Will you remember me, my love? Remember me, my love. Remember me, my love. Will you remember me, my love? Remember me, my love. Remember me, my love. Remember me, my love. Will you remember me, my love?
Remember Mishka Frith. Mishka, MISHKA.com. You'll find him at his website, on Instagram, at Mishka Music, on Facebook. Mishka, thank you so much. So much respect. And you did us so much honor tonight.
Oh, likewise, man. Thanks for playing the new tune.
Yes, very exciting. Please do let us know when it officially comes out. That was amazing. And so we'll share it with our audience at that point as well.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it. Thanks.
All the best to you. It's been a pleasure.
You too, and everyone. Thanks.
With a big thank you to Mishka Frith, and another big thank you to Dr. Mickey McComb-Kobza. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeune, and our entire family here at the Life Changes Show, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, as your world changes, as our ocean changes, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.